Blog Talk Radio.
Gotta keep reading, 'cause this book's gonna be a good book. 'Cause this book's gonna be a good book. 'Cause this book's gonna be a good, good book to read. Gonna be a good book, 'cause this book's gonna be a good, good book to read.
Pick up that book and turn the page. You'll never know just what you'll find. Information or fantasy, drama and art, I'll make you smart.
Hi everyone, you just heard the Ocoee Middle School Florida's Gotta Keep Reading. Welcome to It's Storytime Gather Round on the World of Ink Network at Blog Talk Radio with your hosts, authors, Christy Condaleo and myself, J.D. Holliday. Three Saturdays a month, we will be here to read a story or two. If you have any questions or comments, you can call in after the stories are read. Our number is 714-242-5259. That's 714-242-5259, or join us in the chat room here at Blog Talk Radio. It's Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, on December 1st, 2012. It's story time, gather round, can be listened to live at blogtalkradio.com/World of Ink Network, or you can join us here in the chat room at Blog Talk Radio. You can also listen on demand at any time you like, at the same address or on iTunes by researching World of Ink Network. You can also find out information on our site. It's storytimeforkids.blogspot.com. Hi, Christy. We have two stories today. The first one is The Rainforest Party by author and illustrator Lorraine Day. And the second one is your chapter book, Pale Shades and the Mysterious Paper.
Hey, J.D. Yes, I'll be reading from Lorraine Day's The Rainforest Party. A little synopsis about it. Hector Armando was a little armadillo who wanted to find a special talent that he could share with his friends at the big rainforest party. As he walked into the forest, he noticed his friends were all busy collecting things and practicing their own talents to get ready for the big party. As he came upon his many friends, he would try to do some of the same things they were doing, but he just wasn't fast enough, or his legs were too short, or he wasn't tall enough. He tried again and again, but became sad when he realized he may not have any special talent. He curled up to hide, and suddenly he became aware of a hidden talent that was there all along, something Mother Nature gave him that he forgot about. He would share a very special talent with his friends at the rainforest party. And now we begin. Hector Armando was a little armadillo with a big problem. Each of his friends had a special talent. Hector Armando wanted a special talent, too. He decided to go into the rainforest to find it. I have to find something in time for the big rainforest party tomorrow, thought Hector Armando. As he walked into the forest, he noticed his friends, AJ and Andre. The turtle slowly sifted through the dirt, while the tiny lizard snapped his skinny tongue at the ground. What are you doing? Hector Armando asked. We are collecting ants and beetles for the big party, said AJ. The bugs come out after he scratches the ground, then I can grab them up with my tongue, Andre announced. Hector Armando tried to collect the insects, but he wasn't fast enough. He would have to find something else he could do. Next, he saw his friend Panis. The brightly colored toucan darted from one treetop to the next. What are you doing? Asked Hector Armando. I'm using my large beak to gather papayas and coconuts for the big party, said Panis. Hector Armando tried to collect the tropical fruits, but he wasn't tall enough. He would have to find something else he could do. "What are you doing?" asked Hector Armando when he saw his friend Dante. "I'm practicing my jump for the contest I'll have at the big party," said the little frog. Hector Armando tried to jump over a branch, but his legs weren't long enough. He really would have to find something else he could do. "I really don't have any special talent," said Hector Armando sadly. All he wanted to do was curl up into a little ball and hide, and that's just what he did. Hector Armando pulled his feet inside of his shell. He tucked his tail in tight, right next to his head, and turned himself into a little ball. Hector Armando felt safe, so he hid there for a long time, thinking. Then, bump! Suddenly, he was rolling down a hill. He rolled faster and faster. He didn't know what to do. Then, thump! His shell bumped against a tree, and he stopped rolling. Safe at last, thought Hector Armando. Slowly, he opened his shell. "It's Hector Armando," the toucan shouted. "How did you go so fast?" said the frog. "I could hardly keep up with you." "I'm so sorry," said the turtle. "I thought I was digging under a stone. I would love to go that fast. Can you take me for a ride?" "Me too," asked the lizard. Hector Armando smiled. "Absolutely. Let's give it a try." One by one, he took a small friend into his shell. They rolled and rolled, faster and faster. Everyone wanted a turn. Hector Armando found himself rolling all afternoon. The next day, he gathered in the rainforest for the big party. Hector Armando wasn't hiding in his shell. He had finally found his own special talent, and his friends loved it. The end.
Okay, that was an adorable story.
Lorraine, oh, it's beautifully illustrated, too.
Yes, you told me that it is. Okay, Lorraine Day is the illustrator of A Sweater for Duncan, written by Margaret G. Malone, as well as the author and illustrator of The Rainforest Party, which we just heard. And The Rainforest Party can be bought at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Lorraine Day is also the illustrator of several books for Rockport Publishers, Rodale Press, and Simon & Schuster. Her works include greeting cards, and her designs appear in stores such as Walmart, Big Lots, Kmart, JCPenney's, and more. For more on Lorraine Day and her book and works, you can go to her site, www.daystudio.com. That's DEYSTUDIO.com. Christy, you are going to now read from your chapter book, Pale Shades in the Mysterious Paper. Will you tell us about it?
Oh, yes. I'll be reading the first three chapters, but you can read the whole story at lulu.com for the next 3 days for free. Just go to lulu.com and type in Pale Shade in a Mysterious Paper and then click on the PDF download version. You'll see the zero with the dollar sign, so that's the one. And then click on Add to Cart. In Pale Shade in a Mysterious Paper, the synopsis is this. What if your heart's greatest wish could be granted by simply folding the right corner of a sheet a paper just a bit there, increase it a little bit here, that corner, oh, and you mustn't forget the words. 12-year-old Pale Shade is not excited with her Aunt Sim's simple gift, even though the guardian of the rare fine shop insists she needs it. After a few careful folds and two special words, she quickly changes her mind, though. Pale's happiness soon turns sour because Owl Blot wants that paper as well. Every last sheet. Owl Blot, he is not above manipulating orphans or kidnapping disagreeable ants to get what he desires. So how can Pale give up what she's always longed for? But how can she not? Can a few paper allies and an odd brother and sister help her, or will Pale lose everything? Okay, start with chapter one. Rare finds. Twittering birds announced Ann Nemison's arrival. Much like the usual door chime, it greeted the patron and alerted the clerk of a presence. However, this was not just any shop. This was Rare finds. So it was most certainly no ordinary chime. The chirpy greeting struck a chord deep within Anne, and its effect was not subtle. Even though the material of her dress swung forward, her body held back at the threshold. Her fingers gripped the door's brass handle seconds longer than necessary. Every nerve in her body surged with mad tingles as a strange anticipation bubbled up within. Something was about to begin. That was precisely when it happened. An odd stillness crept up from the floor, and its milky white mist stalked around her, almost as if she was being infected. Whether or not she was deemed acceptable was left unanswered, or perhaps the answer lies within the fact that nothing foul had occurred to. Just as quickly, the breath in which she held back flowed once more. A slight shake of her head and Anne's senses were instantly cleared, but she was not prepared for what met her eyes. It is not often in life that one forgets to breathe, but that is just what Anne did. In fact, for all her 35 years, no experience could have prepared her for this. Anything she had ever considered exciting in her life was now forgotten. There was no point in wasting the precious space in her mind with those trivial tidbits. Behold, her thoughts cried out in humble reverence. This was definitely unlike any thrill that she had ever felt upon entering any of her favorite places, which incidentally were bookstores and libraries. From every crammed nook, every overstuffed cranny, and even the mysterious space that lies between, the shop welcomed her and beckoned for her exploration. Of course, with eyes wide and a dreamy smile, she was only too happy to accept the invitation. From somewhere deep within the shop, a gentle soul played a haunting melody from its pan flute. Its airy spirit lifted Anne's feet, and she seemed to float across the cobblestone floor. In just a glance, Anne marveled at how easily reality blended in with the fantastic. Dozens of finely crafted trolls were posted throughout the store, for there could be no fiercer guard. Here and there, mischievous sprites joined in as they peeked around corners and over high edges. Their appearance was so natural that even the most boring realist dare not defy their right of existence. Framed paintings and sketches of fairy cottages added an extra dimension to the walls. They seemed more like windows to other worlds than mere artwork. It was upon one particular shelf that Anne discovered just how dangerous fantasy can actually be. A scholarly monkey sat atop a golden ceramic box reading his oversized book. Below the wise primate and underneath the lip of the box's lid lay a seemingly simple etched flower. Centered within its brassy petals, a burning ruby was set. Its starry sparkle held Anne's eye, and suddenly nothing else existed. It was just before she was completely lost that a long, thin, furry pendulum swung across her view. Her eyes latched onto the tail and were instantly diverted. They traveled upward, but were stopped when a single finger stretched out and then wagged from side to side. At another time, Anne might have found the monkey's stern look comical, but not this time. There was nothing amusing about being scolded by a ceramic monkey on a box. She frowned. Ceramic monkeys simply do not scold, or do they? Several shadows floated by and drew her attention to the ceiling. That is, if one could call it that. Actually, it looked similar to the sky outside, but with more traffic. High above and poised, ready to dive on, any enemy that dare trespass. We're very skilled model planes and sequels, all of which were a little too realistic for Anne's liking. Both bird and machine swam around a beautiful sea of multicolored glass. A voice interrupted her thoughts, and then in a slightly accented tone, added, "Welcome to Rarefiance." Anne's hand flew to her mouth, and she swallowed back the scream that, without a doubt, could have shattered the glass above or at least cracked it. "My name is Gampy Rado. You may call me Gampy. I am the guardian of these treasures you see." The 4.5-foot-tall man continued in his nasally voice. He waited ever so politely, but when Anne did not speak, he added, "I'm here to assist you." Anne found that her brain could not form words, so instead she stared, and much to her later embarrassment, her mouth dropped open. Behind his antique pince-nez glasses, Gampy's deep blue eyes sparkled. A knowing smirk tilted his lips upward, and he lightly touched the center of the unique frames with a thin finger. Wait, did that odd little man just say he was the guardian of these items? Anne thought as her brain decided to work once more. She watched with utter fascination as he pinched the right corner of his spectacles and adjusted them some more. Just how many times a day did they slide down his nose? After mentally shaking herself for such an absurd thought, she quickly returned to examining the rest of his most proper shopkeeper. Gampy Rado was definitely different from most people. Oh, scratch that. He was the epitome of unique. Aside from the most obvious, for almost no one has the exact same physical attributes, his true difference was something that most would never see. This man was a master observer. No matter if the object was as small as a ladybug or as grand as an elephant, he examined every angle, every detail, and the possibilities of what might lay within. This rare ability, combined with decades of assisting the patrons who walked through the door of Rare Finds, taught him how to discern just what was needed, even if it was not necessarily wanted. Just to be certain, he did not misjudge a patron. He was supposedly human, after all. He could always rely on the chime. You see, each patron was announced by a particular bird call. The twittering sound not only foretold the patron's disposition, that hinted to their need as well. Hello? Yes. Well, thank you, Mr. Rado. Anne greeted with some difficulty and a slight nod of her head. Per usual, she pulled at her sleeves and then wrung her hands together. My name is Anne, and I'm looking for... Gampy raised his long left forefinger to politely interrupt. If his mind recalled correctly, her interest was marked by blackbirds. Oh, yes, they always announced a pleasant guest. He knew exactly what she required now. It is a pleasure to make your acquaintance, son, and I must insist that you call me Gampy. Now that we have all that social etiquette out of the way, please follow me. I know exactly what it is that you need. He requested with a wave of his hand. He either ignored or did not see the perplexed look on her face. For when he turned back, it was merely to add, "The items you seek for your niece are right this way." It was after several twists and turns that they stopped between a rock and a... "Excuse me," Anne blurted out when her feet suddenly halted. Her mind simply refused to allow them to move even one more inch without hearing an explanation. Her neck craned forward and her head tilted back and forth as she examined what looked to be a 6-foot-tall rock. Aside from its obvious size, it was the most ordinary object in the room. What? Ah, yes, Gampy sighed knowingly. His eyes became reverent as he regarded the rock. Yes, that is one of my most treasured pieces. However, it is not what you seek. It is intended for another. Anne's brows furrowed, and her eyes snapped to him in question. Who on earth would want a rock? More importantly, what would they do with one that big? A rare piece indeed, he said, reminiscent. It was removed from a road less traveled. It took the original owner nearly 10 years to remove it. But once he did, ah, yes, what an incredible journey he had after that. One for the storybooks, I'd say. Without a doubt, it's a very hard piece to come by these days, especially one so small. Few people have the tenacity and the courage. Wait, Anne interrupted quickly. She was still digesting the fact that the rock was an actual item intended for sale. But to call it small and then to, wait, it's from where? Ah, but you've already traveled down a similar route, Gimpy told her. He lifted up his eyepiece and regarded her carefully. Yes, though it didn't take you quite as long. Anne found that her mind refused to process another thought, especially any that regarded the rock. How else do you suppose you were able to find the entrance to the shop? It does not appear for just anyone. Rare finds is very selective in its choosing who may enter. Even I have no say. Anne's brows relaxed and her face drained of expression. She hoped the odd man did not expect her to respond. What response could possibly follow that? Now let us find your item, he told her as he turned and continued on. A few yards past the... Dare she think of it as a mere rock again? Anne was still replaying the conversation in her head when Gampy stopped suddenly and waved his left hand as if to say, ta-da! Anne was speechless. Before her sat a seemingly simple, albeit very thick, stack of paper. Despite the multicolors, the varied sizes, and even the few sheets with clever patterns, it was still just paper. At least that is what she was certain her niece would say. Disappointment did not have a chance to settle, though, as her eyes drifted to behind the stack. This time they found something a little more exciting. Propped up on a wooden stand, as if to hint to the paper's purpose, was a very thick book entitled Origami. It is highly advisable to keep track of the paper at all times, Gampy instructed in a voice much too serious to be speaking of ordinary paper. It has a tendency to be mischievous, so your young niece must be careful not to allow her thoughts to wander when she turns it. Focusing is a necessary key with this paper. Anne felt words puddle in her mouth, but then quickly dried up as he mentioned her niece again. How did this odd man know that she was shopping for pills? Statua Magus, he pronounced slowly. Despite Anne's mental wanderings, he continued his pitch. Wait, excuse me? Anne said in a perplexed tone. What? Statua Magus, Gampy repeated without any exasperation in his tone. It is the phrase she will need to speak once the paper is ready. Anne froze. All of a sudden, it was as if bells and alarms sounded in her head. Magic words, special papers, and a thick book? It was too perfect to believe. Pell was certain to be surprised. Her sharp eyes returned to the paper, and even though she was not certain just what, she was positive that the paper did more than merely fold into animals. A series of frantic chirps cried out, and the air instantly chilled with an eerie apprehension. Gampy visibly stiffened at the chime's warning. His breath held, and he listened intently to another round of the anxious birds. Wrens, he frowned. They were never a good sign. With narrowed eyes, Gampy turned in the direction of the door. In a hurried but much controlled voice, he urged, Miss Nevinson, it has been a pleasure, but I'm afraid we must part at this time. The items are ready to go. You need only to gather them. If you just follow that path, you will discover the door. The stunned expression on Anne's face went unnoticed as the agitated man hurried away. She was not certain if she was more disturbed by his abrupt departure or the fact that he knew her last name. Deciding she must have given it to him and just not remembered, she gathered up the paper and book. The path did indeed take her to the door, as Hewitt's guardian had promised. Now, all that was left was to decide how she was going to pay if Gampy was attending someone else. Anne frowned as she looked around, but then her expression changed to one of bewilderment. To the right, nestled in the corner and near the door, was a dusty antique register. Propped up against it was a small plaque with eloquent writing. Cash, credit, or check is not wanted here. The items within rarefying is not for sale. Each piece is destined for a specific individual and will not leave the shop with anyone other than its intended. Therefore, if you find that you can walk out the door with the item, then it must belong to you. Even after reading the message three times, Anne still found it hard to believe what kind of store gave its merchandise away. She shook her head and decided that she would leave her information just in case. After she scribbled a quick note to Gampy, her eyes gave the shop one last appreciative glance. Chapter 2, The Gift. The doorknob rattled and Pell's eyes shot open. A small smile tickled at her lips as she closed her eyes again. She did not need to see her visitor to know who it was. Her parents had told her before they left that her aunt would be arriving today. Aunt Sin, since it was much easier to say than Aunt Nimison, was Pell's favorite aunt. Well, in truth, she is Pell's only aunt, but Pell felt that she deserved the title of favorite. Oh, dearest Pell, as much as I am pleased by your love of reading, it also grieves me greatly, Aunt Sin complained to her pale niece. With one hand on her hip and the other wrapped around a square box, she looked an imposing figure standing in the doorway. So how long have you kept yourself cooped up in your room this time? You do realize that it is nearly noon, right? Pell rolled her eyes and tried to hide the smirk that played at her lips. Her aunt was also extremely predictable. Aunt Sin sighed deeply and entered the dreary room. She noted with much aggravation that the shades were tightly shut, which was never a good sign. So, what would be the matter this time? She knew that shutting herself away was Pell's way of dealing with a problem. Aunt Sin, I'm sick, Pell remarked irritably. With a dry cough that was more trauma than necessity, she sat up and leaned back against the headboard. Sick people are supposed to convalesce, and that's exactly what I'm doing. Uh-huh, Aunt Sin mumbled dryly. She dropped the box at the foot of Pell's bed on her way to the window. A loud hiss erupted from behind as Aunt Sin drew apart the curtains and let the light in. Yes, it's just as I feared. You've relapsed. Back to your same old ways again, I see. Really, Aunt Sin, there are no old ways, Pell groaned. You know I have really bad allergies and asthma. Yes. So that gives you an excuse to hide away in your room while the rest of us must continue on? No, Pell huffed. Well, it sounds to me as if you need something other than your maladies to occupy that overly active brain of yours. Luckily, I found just the thing to remedy that, Aunt Sin said. She tilted her head and wiggled her eyebrows. She plopped down on Pell's bed and lifted the lid from the box. With a smirk, she leaned forward and rummaged through it. Pell yawned and tried to feign indifference, but her eyes didn't miss a thing. Suddenly, the spark of interest fizzled, though, and something akin to a scowl flittered across her face when she saw what her aunt pulled from the box. Aunt Sin, her aunt, her favorite aunt, just pulled a stack of paper from the box. Following right after was a very thick book. Pell's sour expression made Aunt Sin chuckle. Just you wait, Pell, she thought. She made certain the book was face up, and she dropped it on the bed, and then she started to leaf through the pages carefully. Once the right color was located, she placed the rest of the paper back inside the box. Now, she would show her niece. First, Aunt Sin folded the crisp white sheet in half diagonally. She then folded the half in half again, only to unfold it and bring the right corner up and over to the left. Four steps followed, and since this was not Aunt Sin's first creation, Her deft fingers worked quickly and without the usual beginner's doubt. Later on, there would be time to show Pell the actual steps and techniques. Right now, she needed to recapture her niece's interest. Swift and tireless, Aunt Sen's fingers worked until, tall and full of grace, the miniature crane stood in Aunt Sen's palm. She lifted it up when she noticed Pell leaning forward and squinting. "I'm 12, Aunt Sen," Pell groaned, and then let out a good huff for measure. "I've heard of origami before. It's just folded paper. There's nothing special about that." "Ah, I see. You're back to that way of thinking again." Aunt Sen shook her head and sighed loudly. Her lips puckered, and before she whispered the special words to the crane, she made certain Pell was watching. Once the words were spoken, Aunt Sen sucked in a breath and then released it. "On your way now, Horatio." Pell rolled her eyes, but they quickly returned to the paper bird. A slight movement made her squint again. Did it just stretch and then lift its legs? It glided across the bed and toward the door. It dropped with every second until gravity finally prevailed and it drifted so low that Pell lost sight. She huffed dryly and then turned to her aunt. "Well, that was below amazing." "Oh," Aunt Sen murmured, not so deflated. Her lips turned up slightly and her eyebrows rose innocently. Using only her eyes, she invited her unimpressed niece to give one more look to the downed bird. Pell's overly dramatic sigh was cut short as the white blur shot to the ceiling. The little crane was a bit unsteady in flight, so he swooped back down and landed, or rather crashed onto the quilt that was covering Pell. Gasping, much like a fish out of water, Pell's mouth dropped open and then closed just as quickly. She stared at the little bird in awe as it wobbled toward her. Pure wonder poured from her wide eyes. "How? Oh, Pell, have you really forgotten so quickly what happens when you expect the ordinary?" her aunt asked. She reached back inside the box and pulled out another crane. He quickly jumped from her hand and went to inspect Horatio. "Go on, Phineas." "I know," Pell grumbled and then recited, "to expect the ordinary is to receive the ordinary." "Precisely," Aunt Sen agreed. "I, however, did not imagine something so simple. So, but," Pell interrupted. "But," Aunt Sen repeated, raising her brow. "My dear Pell, I am anything but ordinary. You are anything but ordinary. This family is anything but ordinary. I find it highly frustrating that you keep insisting everything is dull when you don't even try to see what it is you're looking at." "That's absurd," Pell rebutted with a huff. She grabbed her eyeglasses from the nightstand and quickly, "I mean, I always wear my glasses, but I can see." "Yes, well, when you do decide to wear them, there is a difference between seeing and seeing," Aunt Sen said. "Everyone in this family has that gift, and despite your stubbornness, so do you. That is why your parents are called upon so often. Not every papermaker and bookbinder has arrangements made for them to travel to their customers. What your parents create is special, because they not only see, but they see what could be." "I miss them," Pell blurted out suddenly. Her eyes tried to focus on the crane, but they kept blurring from the tears she refused to shed. "I don't understand why I can't go with them anymore. I'm older now, so I can help." So the real reason wasn't so hard to fight for this time. Aunt Sen thought with relief. It usually took weeks until Pell would explain why she was so upset. Pell was silent and continued to watch the cranes maneuver the uneven terrain of her bed. Her lips twitched with each unsteady step they made. Aunt Sen nudged the cranes with her finger. "Get along there. Go on now. Strut your stuff." Horatio shook his wings indignantly before tucking them back for his run. He raced to the edge of the bed and dropped. Phineas nipped at Aunt Sen's fingers and refused to move. Pell rushed to the side, but then quickly fell back as Horatio floated upwards. The smile on her niece's face was worth more to Aunt Sen than money or jewels. Aunt Sen, what else can be made with that paper? Pell asked suddenly. Her smile drooped a little as she considered the impossible. Does everything it makes? Well, will it act the same as Horatio and Phineas? Aunt Sen bit her cheek to hold back a huge triumphant smile. She knew what her niece was considering. Excitement tingled through her fingers as they sifted through the paper once more until she located the right piece. It was just past the 5-inch green square and right before the 10-inch plaid square that Aunt Sen's fingers finally halted. The 1.5-foot long onyx square was nearly plain. A small cream-colored oval, about the size of her palm, was the only blemish to the shadowy page. Ah, yes, here we are. This will suit him perfectly, Aunt Sen murmured at her find. Pell looked at the paper and frowned. Aunt Sen was right about the color. The only trouble was, well, how was that flat, one-dimensional surface to become her dream? Pell's eyes drifted to the enormous book that sat close to the bed's edge. Yes, yes. It's a very thick book with loads of designs, instructions, and whatnot, but I think the paper will make an exception just this once, Aunt Sen said. She had read the book from front to back before she even tried to make an origami. Phineas had been such a surprise that she decided not to use the paper for any other test creation. An exception. How can paper? Pell began but stopped when her aunt placed a finger up to her lips. The paper will hear you, she whispered to her niece. She took Pell's hands and placed the paper within them. The most important rule of this paper is to focus. It is also very wise to always keep track of it. From what I've seen it do, I have to agree. Focus, Pell repeated just before she closed her eyes. It was odd and a bit distracting, but the paper felt warm. If possible, it even made her fingers tingle. The image in her mind was sharp. How could it not be? For as long as she could remember, she had dreamt of and longed for one particular thing. Well, there's no wonder at what you plan to make, but what will you call him? Aunt Sen asked with a knowing smile. One eyelid lifted, and Pell let loose the biggest smile her aunt had ever seen. I think I'll call him Nibs. Chapter 3, Really Real. Several hours later, Pell stared at the small paper cat on her bed. With a little help from her aunt and an intuition that she never knew she possessed, Nibs had been created. He was perfect, sleek, smooth, and full of attitude. The little black cat with a cream-colored snout sat proudly before her. Slanted green eyes that Aunt Sen had painted perfectly stared into her brown ones. Still, Pell frowned. Is he finished? Aunt Sen asked, once she noticed her niece's fast deflating expression. Yes, I think so, Pell mumbled. Her expectations plunged further with each non-animated second. There is no think about this. You must be certain. The book made it very clear that the paper can only be turned once and that the form it takes is lasting, Aunt Sen urged. Well, really, I think he's perfect, except... Why isn't he moving like yours? Pell asked softly. Because you haven't spoken the words to him, Aunt Sen replied simply. Words? What words? Pell's heart hammered in her chest. There are two magical words that you must whisper to the paper. Seal the form and awaken his nature they will. Aunt Sen instructed in her wise Yoda-like voice. That sounds... just too silly and much too unreal, Pell said, but her voice wavered and quickly lost conviction when Horatio guided past her nose. Silly or not, it's what must be done if you want your dream, Aunt Sen replied smugly. She carefully picked up Nibs and placed him in Pell's hand. Since he will belong to you and you to him, you must recite the words while holding him. Now are you ready? Fine, Pell sighed. Seeing Nibs cradled in her hands made her somewhat happy, but she wanted more. Statue of Magus. Etson whispered into her ear, causing Pell to jump. When she saw her niece's puzzled expression, she sighed loudly before explaining, "Those are the words you must say to wake Ned." Pell's right eyebrow arched high enough to make Spock proud. "It's Latin. It means imagine more," Aunt Sin said, and then smirked at the end when she saw her niece's thoughtful expression. Pell focused hard on Ned's. Carefully, she twisted her wrist left, then right as she gave him a final check. To be honest, she was in awe that she had even made him. It had not been easy, and at first she had thought it impossible, but something in her mind had whispered for her to keep going. Now, here in her hands was her Ned's. The only flaw, which really could be considered a cool detail, was a little crescent-shaped tear in his left ear. Her finger had tugged on the folded corner a little too hard. "Say the words," Aunt Sin encouraged. "Remember to focus." Aunt Sin's send-off of Horatio flashed in Pell's mind. She closed her eyes. After taking a deep breath, all of her thoughts went to Ned, and then in a breathy voice, she whispered, "Statue of Mesius." At first, she dared not open her eyes. She waited for something she knew not what. Perhaps it was for a ta-da or a whoosh, something to let her know it had worked. She was so afraid. It was not of what she would see. It was of what she would not see. "Tell, honey, I know I said you need to see with more than just your eyes, but sometimes you really do need to use your eyes," Aunt Sin said with a chuckle, even though she understood her niece's apprehension. Pell had always longed for a cat, but her allergies were so severe that even the medication did not make it possible. There was a slight movement in Pell's hands and that tickled. Did the paper just move? Curiosity lifted one eyelid, just a crack. It was not enough to see, though, so she pulled her lid up higher until Pell's eyes shot open. She stared at the little cat before her. Nibs was now more than just paper, more than just a folded sheet, and more than just a dream. He was sitting cradled in her hands, his paw lifted to his mouth. Even though his mouth did not open and no tongue darted out, he still rubbed his paw against it with the same unconcerned manner a real cat would. The mysterious paper now turned animated cat still held the creases from being folded, yet the folds were now expanded somehow, much like a balloon does when blown up. When she tilted her hand to inspect him further, Nibs's paw shot down and his tail flew up in an attempt to keep his balance. After sending Pell a very displeased glare, he lifted his other paw and resumed his preening. His tail lowered and curled around his body. He's really real, Pell said so softly that her aunt almost did not hear. And that's it for Chapter 3, and I'm stopping there.
Okay. Well, it's a great story, Christy. It's wonderful. It's a wonderful adventure. I really enjoy it. I read it myself, and I can attest that it's a fun read. Okay. You also have, besides the e-book version, you also have a paperback version. Where can people buy it?
The paperback version, they can buy on Amazon and Lulu.
Okay.
And the ebook version, they can buy the PDF from Lulu, but the regular ebook that fits on Nooks, they can get from Barnes & Noble.
Okay. And you have a bunch of other books out. Why don't you tell us what they are?
There's Something Greater Than Fear. It's a picture book. Time Cope is a picture book. Gaskell's Bravery was my first book. It also is a picture book. The One Sock Princess is a picture book. As you can tell, I do a lot of picture books. Spirit Feathers is a small short story collection. And, of course, there's Pell Shade. And then Fragments of the Key is a series book for young adults. The first book is Gila's Misfit, but right now it's currently under revision because I'm going into a second edition for that one.
Okay. Okay, and where can people find out about you and your books?
You can find out about me and my book at effiescreations.com. Or I also have a blog. It's chriscondaleo.wordpress.com. And today I just uploaded where you can find two instruction sheets on how to create your own origami creatures. There are two critters that's going to be in the book.
Good, good. Okay, well, thank you, Christy, for reading both books today. It was double trouble for you there. One Being Your Own, Pale Shades and the Mysterious Paper. And we want to thank Lorraine Day for letting us read her book, The Rain Forest Party.
Yes, that was an awesome book.
Okay, our time is just about up. I'm J.D. Holliday, and you can find me and my books at thebookgarden.net. My co-host is Christy Condaleo, and you can find her and her books at epiescreations.com. And you can always find us and anything you want to know about the show at our site. It's storytimeforkids.blogspot.com. You can listen to all our shows and the shows on the World of Ink Network at blogtalkradio.com/worldofinknetwork. On December 3rd, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, join The Writing Mama Show with award-winning author and editor V.S. Vernier when she chats with award-winning romance suspense author Kaylin McFarren. On December 4th, 4 p.m. Eastern, join A Good Story is a Good Story with author Marcia Casper Cook for a special show about horror and dark fiction. On December 6th, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, join Book Discussion with host Fran Lewis for a discussion with Kenneth Eaton and Sandra Elrod. Join the special World of Ink Network show and V.C. Andrews on December 7th, 1 p.m. Eastern, when Marcia Cook, V.S. Grenier, and Bethany Cross welcome V.C. Andrews, one of the most popular authors of all times. Check out our other shows on the network as well, Families Matter Show with V.S. Grenier. Again, to get Christy Condaleo's book, Pale Shades and the Mysterious Paper, for free at lulu.com for the next 3 days, just go to lulu.com and type in Pale Shades and the Mysterious Paper and click on the PDF version, download, and add it to the cart. Thank you for joining us. Please join us next week, December 8th, for Cinderella's Magical Wheelchair, An Empowering Fairy Tale by Jules Katz, and Babysitting Sugar Paw by award-winning author and editor, V.S. Grenier. Bye now.
Bye.